Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay or bisexual men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any questions for me or my guests during this broadcast, feel free to contact me at bonkay@AOL.com. That's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E at AOL.com. I'd just like to mention, as I was listening to that song, It's Going to Be a Bright, Sunny Day, I thought, boy, we could really use one with the weather across the country, including here in Philadelphia, hitting record lows. Well, I know around the country other people have it much worse, but we do need that bright, sunny day. And all I can say to all of our listeners is Happy New Year. This is New Year's Eve. This is an important broadcast, and that's why we're broadcasting on New Year's Eve. And I just want to mention that my upcoming healing weekend is going to be taking place in April, the end of April, the last weekend. And if you're interested in joining me and a bunch of dynamic people who are in all different phases of their recovery, just write to me at bonkay@AOL.com. That's bonkaye@AOL.com. It's going to be right outside of Washington, D.C., and it's going to be a wonderful two-day event. I'll be happy to send you details if you send me a request. So without further ado, first I want to introduce my co-hostess for tonight, Deborah Sutton. Deborah, thank you for coming back.
Oh, you're welcome,
Bonnie. As I've been always telling you to do that. And Deborah's helped me out with some shows recently, and she'll be doing one with me again in the next couple of weeks. And I know that Deborah's a major source of support to our women who are going through this particular situation of finding themselves being traumatized, going through this kind of a marriage. But our guest speaker tonight is a professor, Dr. Karen Huffer. She's an adjunct professor for John Jay College, which is a very noted, prestigious college, and she's developed a whole course on Americans for Disability Advocacy, and she began a whole system called Lethal Abuse Syndrome, which she also has a book about. We'll talk about her books. Also, what her program does as far as turning people into advocates for others who have problems. And a lot of times when people talk post-traumatic stress, you know, they think that it's only for soldiers coming home from war. But Dr. Huffer is certainly a psychologist and also works with family therapy, and she can talk a little more about that. So, Dr. Huffer, thank you so much for coming back to the show.
Well, thank you, Bonnie, and it's nice to be celebrating New Year's Eve with you.
Yes, absolutely, because what you're doing is so important to so many women. And maybe you could talk a little bit, first of all, about your, you know, about your work with couples and marriage and therapy.
Well, the biggest problem that I've done this now for more than 30 years, so the biggest problem that I found when I had my private practice and I was doing a lot of intensive therapy and work with families just kind of reared its head, being if they were involved in the court system, they tended to not get better the same as those that were not involved in the court system. Now, many things can bring us court. One of the biggest problems, and in the population you that is joining us tonight and celebrating with us, this population that you learn that your spouse is gay or bisexual, how much lying occurred? How much deception was there? How much taking from the relationship that went to another relationship you had nothing to do with, knew nothing about? So those relationships, and as they break up or as they are, try to work themselves out, often end up in legal processes. You don't dissolve a marriage or you don't deal with many marital issues without the court involved. So we're talking about what happens to you then. You already had a trauma. Now you go to court and you find another trauma, and that is the lies that are told in court, the power games, the bullying. So much abuse goes on in that any of the legal processes, whether it's depositions, whether it's even trying to work something out just with two lawyers, you find that the lawyers speak the same language, and you are left serving them very often rather than them serving you.
And that creates a whole new set of trauma, because not only have you been traumatized, as you mentioned, in your marriage, which in these marriages, for almost all of them, and there are millions, you know, there's tremendous trauma of living a life that's not even a real life and being blamed for things that have nothing to do with you because, you know, the truth wants to be hidden by your husband. So now you go to court and all of a sudden you're re-traumatized all over again. And I know that happens to so many of our women who are part of our support network who just don't know what to do. I have one of these women going to court in two more days after, you know, a number of years, and she's already feeling so traumatized. So this is where your program comes in, correct?
Yes, and it's so important. I'm so glad Deborah's out there doing this work, because sometimes you need a person. It's great to have the computer. It's great to have a whole lot of things. It's great to have a lawyer, but a lawyer focuses on the law. And sometimes what you need is a person that understands how you're feeling, that understands the symptoms of your trauma, because your trauma is going to, excuse me a sec, get a drink of water there before I cough.
Yeah, fine.
But the issue becomes, how is this trauma manifesting in you? And you'll have symptoms. This is an injury. This is like you sprained your ankle, or when you went into court, they hit you in the knee with a hammer. You are hurt. you are not mentally ill. And if you are there arguing over children, arguing over finances, whatever, they'll start calling you crazy. And
sure.
You are not. You are having a normal reaction to a very traumatic and abnormal situation. So
exactly.
Somebody needs to understand that. And they need to understand what you need. You will need something changed in that courtroom. You may not be able to be in the same room with the person that you are, your adversary. You may not be able to concentrate and to take care of your needs, to have what we call executive functionality in that courtroom if you are too distracted. And depending, the worst case is when both of you are in there pro se, and then one is going to question the other, usually the one that betrayed or has had what I call coercive control, which is another issue. But then they begin to question you. And then at the same time that they're questioning you, their body language is sending messages. And you can't concentrate. You cannot do your best. And very often with PTSD, you will dissociate. Your brain says, get away. There is a Bengal tiger in here that's going to hurt you because you have already been hurt so badly. So now you're in the jaws of the tiger, and your brain is saying, run. Get the heck out of here. If you can't leave physically, at least leave mentally and emotionally. Go somewhere else, and people do. Then remember, when you go to court, you're there to make a record. You're not there to entertain the judge or to impress the judge or anything. You're there to make a record. That's what the judge will go by. So while your brain is trying to protect you, the other side is having their way with the record, and they're building the record against you. It ends up being a very unfair process. And that person next to you, that advocate who can be by your side, can sit with you at the counsel's table, can be with you in the sequestered room if you choose to be in a sequestered room, they're there watching you. Are you breathing? Do you have water? You know, are you okay? Or are you symptomatic? And if you're symptomatic, then you may need to stop the court for a minute, take a break, go back, and we have developed 8 steps that you learn, that you work the person through so that they can recover on the spot, go back, and protect themselves.
Dr. Hufford, do you find that attorneys are maybe not so welcoming to advocates?
Advocates, right.
Yes. It depends on how insecure the attorney is. I have attorneys I work beautifully with, and it goes like clockwork. When you can find a lawyer that appreciates what you're doing and why, and understands that, lifts that whole load of symptoms, et cetera, off their plate, and you can work together, it is gorgeous. But some of them are so insecure, they have never had a course in disability law in law school. They have never had any exposure to it. They also know you have a limited budget and they have to be paid. So how many people are going to be on this payroll? You know, so some of them, or they say, no, no, that's nonsense. PTSD,
yes.
I mean, you have to have died. You have to have seen someone die. Wrong. You have to have been held helpless and felt jeopardized at the same time. That's what causes PTSD.
Because so far...
Let me ask you this question.
Go ahead, Bonnie. Oh, I was just saying,
okay.
So far that has been my experience. You know, an attorney will tell the client, you don't need an advocate.
Exactly. You've got
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
And at the other part, oh, for God's sake, don't tell the court you got PTSD. You'll never get the kid. That is absolutely a myth. They cannot decide custody or guardianship or control of finances or anything based upon a diagnosis. And the court shouldn't even know about your diagnosis, except in marriage, very often things, they find things out about one another. But the court shouldn't even know. This is confidential. It's private. You never file a motion for it and have it heard in the court, whether you can have accommodations or whether your disability is going to be considered. That is not to be in the public courtroom. It can be in judges' chambers. It can, but it usually goes through court administration.
What I was going to mention is that just like people who can't afford an attorney, they get public defenders. You know, it'd be wonderful if somehow this could be funded through the government as far as getting advocates, you know, because you are dealing with, you know, people with disabilities. And just like you, they pay for you to have a, you know, they pay the public defender, maybe that would be a good idea, you know, that the advocate
well,
should
is.
Also be paid for that way.
It is. It is. In fact, it's the law that they're supposed to pay. However, one of the things that we have to face is the public defender gets paid by the court. Therefore, what kind of service are you getting from that public defender? Usually they are so jammed with cases that they give you 10 minutes if you get that before they meet you before your hearing. They know nothing about you. They do some basic legal protection, but they don't know and they don't invest in your case. So our concern is as soon as I go start forcing the courts to pay, and they should pay about the same as an interpreter gets, because it is it really is the same type of job. It's a limited language proficiency issue, no matter what, whether it comes from symptoms or whatever. So the minute we do that, then the court can begin to tell them what to do, how many cases they have, how long you can stay with the client. Well, you can stop in and check on her, but you can't stay there and watch whether she's breathing. We have found that the private pay or working out, however we can do it, gives them so much more comfort. You are theirs. You're their advocate. You're not the court's advocate to run around courtroom to courtroom. They did it with the victim assistance group. There's a victim's advocate there, and they run from place to place and give you a brochure. You know, that's just not going to help with PTSD.
No, when you're traumatized.
Yeah. They need service.
So let me ask you this question about the program, Dr. Hopper. Now, Deborah took your program, and she loved it because she would tell me each week what she was learning. I'll let Deborah talk about that in a little bit. But just to express this to people who are listening to this show, this course is wonderful for anyone, whether you are involved in counseling, therapy, social work, or just a person who's a do-good person. You don't have to have any specific educational credentials or prerequisites to get in to take your course. Is that correct?
Right. There are no prerequisites. Some of our best advocates are people that have been in the court and know what they went through and have struggled and never want it to happen to another person again. And they will take the course and it hits home. And even if they're still in their own case, they learn things they can apply in their own case. But, yes, it's no prerequisites. Now, it will make a difference on what you can charge. You know, if you're a high school graduate and you were a stay-at-home mom, probably you can charge somewhere from $20 to $60 an hour. If you are a lawyer, if you're a PhD in, you know, in one of the behavioral sciences, they're charging up to, I charge $250 an hour for much of my work. So the price range will vary. But beyond that, many of those women don't care. They do a sliding scale, and they'll just go to work. They help the people whatever you can afford. I always tell them I have to be paid and you have to be serviced. But if we're in a pinch, we're going to work it out, and there's always a way to work it out.
But I think the fact you're bringing up that when you get to court, you know, women are so scared before they get to court, and once they're in court, they cannot think clearly and logically in many cases because they are so nervous and because they're fighting for their lives in many cases. I don't mean to sound overdramatic, but when it comes to your children, when it comes to your finances, you know, your life has already been taken away from you through no fault of your own. You know, you did everything right, but that's like you've already been punished. And now you have to go through these proceedings, and many times they do not work out in your favor, and women don't know how to advocate for themselves. So with an advocate with them, can the advocate, like, kind of push them along and say, don't forget to mention this, don't forget to mention that?
Yes.
Like, is the advocate aware of what's going to be going on in the court?
Yes, pretty much. The advocate does not take the role of the lawyer. The advocate
right.
does not do a legal argument. But if we
right.
think of ourselves like a special education teacher, those
uh-huh.
teachers can talk about the ADA law. They can talk about
uh-huh.
what law applies to what student. They can,
uh-huh.
they're expected to function. So it's the same kind of thing. We cannot be shut up when it comes to pointing out to the court that, Your Honor, what is occurring here, we need to take a break, but I need to let you know that the other side is in violation of USC 4212-203, which means they cannot harass, intimidate, intrude, work to upset my client's performance. And they'll make fun of her. They'll absolutely, I mean, they'll do anything they can get away with. So we can
uh-huh.
point it out. And then I can say, I have copies here, Your Honor. If the bailiff would be kind enough to hand them, if you have a bailiff in the courtroom, to hand the other side and a copy for you, Your Honor. So we can speak up in behalf of our client. The other thing is,
now,
go ahead.
I was going to ask you specifically about the course. So, Deborah, you took this course. And so
yes.
people should know that wherever you are, you can take this course because you do it from home, correct?
Right.
Yeah, it's online. It is now on Blackboard. I think when Deborah took it, I was talking to her live. But now it is all pre-done on Blackboard. So once you are in the course, and this is updated through the last regulations of October 16, so we've updated it all to the current regulations. When you're in this course, you simply are given your code to go on in. You can take it anytime.
Uh-huh.
We have lawyers that have to do it in the evening, or sometimes they'll do it at midnight because they'll get interrupted during the day and that sort of thing. So it's all online. It's 6 lessons. It is
uh-huh.
18 hours total of work, but
uh-huh.
it takes you about an hour and a half a week to do it. It's an easy course in terms of our course is ADA compliant. You can make things bigger, smaller. We have people who are blind. One of my top students was blind, and he was concerned
mm-hmm.
about, you know, getting in and out of everything. He made it beautifully. It's set for color blindness. Anything that you need in that in your coursework that helps you is there. When you do the assessment, which would be the little quiz at the end of the lesson, you have several chances to answer the question. If you get it wrong, you stop and think. Then you're going to get some hints, and then you go back, and then it will click for you. This is a lot of information to give somebody, and there are no tricks in
uh-huh.
it. We don't want to trick anybody. You're not learning to do, brain surgery. What you are learning is how to be sensitive, aware, and learn how to never be bullied again. These lawyers will bully the advocates if they can. They'll come in and start with, "This looks like unlicensed practice of law, Your Honor." No, it isn't. And here are the rules on that. Your Honor, I have a copy, by the way, for both of you if you'd like it. This kind of thing. You never get bullied. And so in this class, we have videotape of in-court proceedings. We work on real cases. We work on domestic violence. We work on veterans. We work on one with terrific abuse, a case in Florida that's very old that I probably even mentioned in the last class. But it continues to progress, and it shows what a determined pro se person can do if they learn the rules, the basic laws, and they just don't let them bully them. It's amazing what you can do. The fear is the worst part. And the fear isn't anything except you don't know what they're going to do to you, and you know they lie. So if they begin to lie in court, how do you defend yourself against that? You know, it's very, very hard.
That's true. When we talk about disabilities, of course, from our point of view, for our immediate needs, for the women who are part of this network, of course, it revolves around post-traumatic stress. But could you talk a little bit about some of the other disabilities that you work with? Because for people to take this course, they have a lot of options here of who to work with. So maybe you could bring up some of those, you know.
There are so many. There are so many conditions that the people need to use the ADA, and they need accommodations, whether it's cancer or lupus or fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue, cancer, diabetes, cardiac conditions, or any of the realm of depression, anxiety, any of the emotional type of adjustment disorders, all of those qualify. Autism is a huge one, and we now have so many people being born with autism, and it's going to become a greater and greater issue in our public commerce, including the court. When we have an autistic client, we usually have to go to the witness stand with them because they will try and be friends with the opposing counsel. They'll try and give them what they want. They just don't understand. They have to protect themselves. And so we have to be there to interpret the question to them and to help them see the different facets that that would be involved in any normal person figuring out, or neurotypical, we would call that person, figuring out how do I protect myself here, because they don't know how in many cases.
I was also wondering, is there a database that you keep of people who are certified that, you know, state by state or city by city, where people who may want an advocate and really weren't aware of it, that they're entitled to it, how do they find one?
We are doing an updated database right now. And, yes, I do that a lot and try to send people to the person that's closest to them. Unfortunately, we don't have enough. We need so many more advocates because they do make a difference. But when an answer is a person helping one person, that's one case, I go into court and we can make a big difference in one case. But that's one case. And so in that same courthouse, we needed 30 or 40 more advocates, you know. But people don't tend to know. Three populations tend to not use the ADA. It's the elderly who almost always qualify and who very often need somebody on their side because somebody is scheming to take their stuff and put them in a home, put them in a basement, whatever. I'm working on horrific cases where the person is being denied their medication and they're going for a substantial estate. So that's one. Domestic violence victims, they're afraid. Oh, my God, if I say anything's wrong with me, I'm going to lose everything, and especially my kids. So they're afraid. That needs to be straightened out. They have nothing to fear. In fact, it's worse if they don't use it. By using the ADA, they have protection. You can't remove a child preventively if a person has a diagnosis. And if you haven't identified that, then you don't have that protection. And I mean confidentially through court administration. And veterans. Veterans tend to, I think they feel like they don't dare admit that they succumbed from battle. But the fact of the matter is everybody does because it's a normal reaction to the battle. And so veterans fought for it, for God's sake. They need to use it.
I think it's just so interesting to think of all the different ways that, you know, this course could be of use to people. Because even if you do this as a part-time thing, you know, people are always looking for different ways to, you know, get some extra money in by doing something they like as opposed to doing something that's meaningless. I mean, this is definitely the step to take when you're looking for something you want to do. And what I love about your course is that you do get certification. You do get, am I correct in saying that? Like you get a kind of badge. I know you used to get that. That you can use
John
in the course,
Jay
right?
Certificate, absolutely. And it makes a difference when it comes from John Jay College. That's a prestigious college in Manhattan. Been around for a long time, well known. The people you see, the talking heads on CNN, they're always calling an expert, one of the professors from John Jay, to talk about criminal justice. So, yes.
And also, I just got an email in. Someone just sent me an email who's listening to the show, and she wanted to know if you have to be in this country to take the course.
No.
Which I said I don't know.
We have people from Canada, the UK, and my course now is being adapted in Holland. It's going to be in Dutch, and it's going to be in Holland, and it is going to be used a lot by the parents of what they call home-sitting children. These are children that get booted out of school for what they figure are unfair reasons, and so they're home-sitting, so the parents are trying to take it to court and do something about it. But, yes, it's and Australia is another. So, no, you don't. And many of the people that have taken the course, because every country signed the UN treaty except the United States, who Barack Obama signed it, but the Congress wouldn't validate it. So we are not part of the UN treaty. We have our own ADA. But the people I'm working with, they're trying now to learn from our ADA. In fact, I spoke in Greece not terribly long ago to an international audience, and we were talking about how we, how the ADA is a good model, and it is good to work with people in other countries to try and bring together a workable policy around the UN treaty and the ADA.
Deborah, you went. You took this course. I know it's been a couple of years, and you know you're. Please don't feel insulted, but you know you're not a youngster who's 30 or you know 40. You're a little bit older, and you told me that you know you found the course very easy to do. In other words, it wasn't you know hard as far as getting online, as far as getting the information. And you seemed each week to be loving what you were learning. So could you talk a little bit about that?
I did love taking the course and the material from the book, Unlocking Justice. It's very interesting. And we did cover a lot of material in a short period of time and learning the disability laws. But I think the course is wonderful and the work really is making a difference.
And Deborah doesn't necessarily go to court, but she is an advocate based on the information that she learned through the court, that she's able to help a number of our women know what to expect and what to prepare for.
Right. If you just, the best thing is preparing them ahead of time. It's just that we're always called in after a catastrophe, you know, and then it's harder to undo.
And that's why
like
you're not going to be in the courtroom, right? Yeah, you can use it for any kind of advocacy.
I've got people that work solely on the phone at home. They do not go to court. They don't go out. They don't meet people necessarily. They work all over the nation, and they work on the phone. And many of those are the people that have subscribed to the concept of therapeutic mitigation. And this works sometimes well with your population of people who have a surprise, a traumatic surprise. We will often have the kids reject the parent who newly is revealing that they're gay. And you have a lot of family, really traumatic family dynamics. And they get worn out and worn down from paying for lawyers to go to court to not get very far. So what we did was develop this idea. It's in the Unlocking Justice book called Therapeutic Mitigation. And it's where they agree not to go to court, but because they're so contentious with one another, that what they do is email their communication through the ADA advocate. And that's the accommodation. So one will write, and, you know, one might say, you know, you've always been a bitch. You never wanted me to have a good relationship with the kids. They're supposed to see me Saturday, and I want them here by 10 o'clock. So we take that. And we rewrite it, and we say it would be really convenient Saturday if the kids could arrive by 10 o'clock, and I hope that doesn't inconvenience you. Let me know. And then the next one might, well, after a while, after you've intervened in these emails and you've got people not attacking one another anymore. And these are tragic
situations.
Yeah, it's
such a great idea.
Because, so some people charge. We charge anywhere from $50 a month to $200, say $100 a person, to send to you to be this go-between. And it is an amazing, simple thing you can do from home. If you have a disability yourself and it's hard for you to go out and work, this is a perfect thing if you can use the phone or the email.
I think this course would be so wonderful for social workers. It really should be part of their curriculum in schools, from colleges. And, you know, you're going into social work, you're going to be working with a lot of people who have some kind of disability. And to understand all the rules, regulations, and advocacy for them, to me, seems like such a great match. Are many social workers coming to this program?
Not enough. Not enough. Mm-hmm. And part of that is they are, or I think part of it, is because their licensing requirements are old-fashioned. In fact, we cannot electronically submit the syllabus and the different things in order to get the, have them get credits. We have to mail it in the mail. Then we have to wait, and then they come back, and they have, we're in an age now where online is simply a fact of our lives. Online learning is the only way some people are ever going to do it. I couldn't today go park my car, haul my book bag up into a place, sit on a hard chair for 3 hours in a class. Could not do that anymore, and a lot of people can't. So.
I think convenience is number one factor here.
Yeah.
And that you can do this from home, and that it's a short course. You know, you're done in a few weeks. And it just seems that even if you don't work, per se, as an advocate, the information you're going to learn to advocate for the clients that you have as a social worker is going to be invaluable. But would you think that, can I use this word, you know, for the advocates, could we say they're more like coaches, the people in the courtroom, you know, coaching them on, you know, how to...
Yeah, they do coaching. They do counseling.
Uh-huh.
Depending on what their credentials are, they can go as far as they want to go. But, they're all of that. They're also protectors. Once you let someone know there is a law that protects them, and the other side can't get away with the games they're playing, you then become a source of comfort and kind of the only friend, in quotes, that they have. Their family is sick of hearing about it. Their friends are sick of hearing about it. You can't have nobody else to talk to about this. And I've got people that I've never seen their faces that trust me probably more than anybody in their lives. And they will call, and it's a, I don't want to call it a loving experience, but it is definitely
a rewarding experience
where you bring the love of doing the right thing and a kind thing into someone's life that is being shattered, and you are consistently there. You may not have an answer, but you're consistently there. You care, you listen, you clarify, you help them sometimes look things up. You'll talk to their lawyer with them. I'll talk to their lawyer. I try and have it be a conference call. I don't like talking to the lawyer without them being there. You can do expert witness work, and you can do that by phone or by Skype. I can be in court in Philadelphia in the morning and in San Francisco in the afternoon testifying in cases. So
let me ask you this question, Dr. Hufford. How does it work as far, I was going to ask, how does it work as far as you train people to be advocates, but how do people themselves learn that they're entitled to an advocate? Is it, and how do advocates find work?
Oh, that's a good question. And we take some time at the end of the class. I offer to go on the radio with clients and appear with them and introduce that they're now in the community, and they can get, you can always get on local radio shows. You can speak to churches and clubs, et cetera. You can get the newspaper usually to write up something and cause you sometimes to be a thought leader, they call it, in a community where you're bringing a new idea and you're sharing it. There are lots of disability groups, NAMI for mental illness. You have Autism Speaks. You have all kinds of, for every disease and every condition, there's a club or an organization of some kind, and there's one that encompasses everybody, and that's invisible disabilities. So the idea is you decide what you want to do. If you want to specialize, say, just in autism, you would contact those places, let them know you're available. I also advise letting the law firms know that you're available, because they may laugh at you and throw the thing in the wastebasket one minute. Next minute they get a client and they got a problem and you got a phone call. And I've got lawyers that call me. Yeah, I got lawyers that call me and say, I've got this client. She's sitting right here with me. I need you to listen in, and what can we do? And
I think all the ideas you have are great. And I know that my newspaper, my local newspaper, which serves thousands of people, they would welcome a story about, you know, this position of advocacy that's a new concept to a lot of people. And I think a lot of people could get interviews with their local papers. And as you say, send it out to local organizations that work with disabilities. So I think there's marketing opportunities there that don't take a lot of time or a lot of money that people could use as far as getting started. And then once you do a good job, good word always spreads, right?
It spreads. And I'll tell you the other part. Municipalities, if they like you, they call you all the time. So we have a group in California that is specializing mostly in foreclosure, and they have contacted the FBI. The FBI now is cooperating with them, has offered to allow them to use a group room there if they want to hold meetings or hold groups. And I do suggest that some of the time you may want to hold a group. You might put in the paper a group starting. Have you felt like, you know, you didn't get a fair time in court? Are you suffering from injustice? Are you having symptoms? Group starting up. And sometimes you can charge so much for the session, and the number of people that show up share your fee. So if you charge, say, $50 for an hour, however many people show up, share, they pitch in at the end of the session to share the fee.
That's a great idea. And then once they meet you and they feel comfortable with you, then chances are they're going to be asking you to come and be their advocate. And that's why I say there's so much possibility here, that you have so many different opportunities. First of all, if you are in social work or you are in psychology or therapy, this is just an added bonus to what you already do. But if you're looking to do something and you don't have any kind of specific credentials, you know, this is also a great opportunity for you to do something that'll make a difference, something that you'll feel better about yourself because you're helping other people. This is really a helping job, right?
Yes, and it feels good, and it's fun. And there's sometimes that you get just the worst creep across from you that is behaving so badly, and with one federal law that you can bring up, you shut them down, and they sit there with their lips pursed like, what the heck just happened? And I love it. I come out just enjoying that. Also, when you reach out to get clients or to work with people in the community, I think one of the important things is to let them know the pain that people are suffering, like foreclosure. Losing your home, in my opinion, and I've testified to this, is a risk to life.
Uh-huh.
For some people with certain disabilities, it's a risk to life. And I think that these banks and these robo-signing thieves, we need to make it clear, this is not something that you can just grab and run with no consequences. This is a threat to life. And the removal of children, how often the child ends up in the wrong hands. And in a case where one party has confided that they had deceived because of their sexual orientation, and you find out, and then where do the children go? Well, you then are alienating that child if they don't give them to the other party. Well, what I find, and I had a group in Las Vegas of people that were transsexual. They were changing their sex, and their kids were having a tough time with it. They were, especially teenagers, they were really embarrassed when dad turned into a woman. Really embarrassed.
Uh-huh.
And they don't want to go. They don't want to be with him. Well, that takes some finesse and some work. That doesn't take a judge saying, well, you're going there anyway, or we're going to, you know, take your visitation with your mother away. So it, getting together, letting the community know, getting certified by a place like John Jay, it is a little more expensive, but it's so well worth it, because you walk in that court with that proof that you've been trained by that college. And it's like Harvard,
uh-huh.
you know, it's got a name. And the judge has to work with you.
So if people, okay, when's your next course starting?
Starts February 5th. And so
people have a few weeks to get in on this.
Yeah, they need to go to my website is the easiest way. Go to equalaccessadvocates.com.
Yes, this will be posted on your, you know, on the show. After the show is over, I'm going to put all your information on there. But once again, it's equalaccessadvocates.com. It'll also be in my upcoming newsletter in a couple of, you know, coming out, you know, in about 10 days, so that you can go to that website and learn more about this. I'll have a little write-up from Dr. Huffer in our newsletter. And no matter where you are, it doesn't matter if you're here in England or in Australia or in Mexico or Canada, that you can be part of this and also, you know, take advantage of it. And I just think, you know, you get a lot from this, and just knowing that how to do these things. Deborah, do you feel you came out more prepared to work with women after taking this course?
I learned so much. I came out with a lot of knowledge.
Were you surprised in some of the things you were learning?
Yes, very much. I love the whole course. There's one thing that was sticking out in my mind, to level out the playing field, it was talking about, and the kind of people you're up against, like Dr. Huffer was talking about, trying to bring you down in court. And she had one chapter called Tit for Tat. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yep, I like that.
And you were telling me as you went through the course, you gained a lot. You gleaned a lot of information, and that was helpful to the women since you've taken the course.
Yes.
So just acting as an advocate, and you know, I was thinking another good idea. I'm going to talk to my city, my state rep. You know, they do all this advocacy in their office. They should really have people trained on how to correctly advocate.
We need to have every state make it a policy that attorneys and, like you were saying, social workers, those in municipalities,
uh-huh.
take a course like this.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. I think it would really make life easier for so many people. You know, it's unfortunate that people who are at disadvantage are the ones who are walked on the most, you know, because they can't defend themselves or they're too beaten down to start with. And, you know, as a therapist, I'm sure you saw plenty of that where, you know, women who are living in these cycles of abuse, and it doesn't have to be physical abuse, emotional abuse is extremely scarring also, that you feel so beaten down before you even start in court that once you get there, you just give up because of the way you're being treated or the way the court handles it, you know, and I'm in the process of fighting for...
They're trying to keep you from being able to talk, keep you from telling your side of the story. They try and block you, and it becomes so frustrating and expensive to try and just get heard in the court.
I know. I feel so sorry for our women who have to spend $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 in court because their husbands want a divorce. I mean, these women didn't even, you know, never even knew what was wrong in their marriage, and now they're being told, this is what it's going to cost you. You're going to lose your home. You're only going to have your children part of the time, where they've done absolutely nothing wrong. I mean,
right?
How can they be doing anything wrong when the husband is gay and, you know, has been leading a side life, and now he met somebody and fell in love, and he wants to leave and leave you in shambles in many cases. So, you know, our women do need advocacy. And that's why for those women who are looking for something to do, this is a great opportunity where you don't have to go through 4 years of college to get something that you can do to help people and make some money. And that's what I love about this course. You can be at any point of your life and take it.
You come right up. You can be an independent contractor and begin taking clients just even on the phone if you want to do that. And something important is that this law supersedes all state and local rules and laws. So the Supreme Court, this is the supremacy clause that says this. So what happens when you go in and you say, I need to record for my own private use the proceedings. Oh, no, that's against the rules in this state. Well, wait a minute. The ADA says that what we do is accommodate, which means we alter the rules, and the supremacy clause says you have to.
So for women who are looking to start their new year with a new career, this is a wonderful opportunity. Don't pass it by. And for all the information that you need, if you go to Dr. Huffer's website, you'll find everything on there, right?
Everything.
Including your two wonderful
everything.
Books you have. Yeah,
yes.
So EqualAccessAdvocates.com.
Yes.
And I understand you just recently updated your one book, correct?
Yes, I did. It will be the third edition of Legal Abuse Syndrome. And we have updated to a certain extent. The amazing thing is when we went through it to revise it, I realized that things have not gotten better since 1995. The only thing that's gotten better is we found the ADA, which has the 2009 Amendments Act, which really helped us. And that's the legal game changer.
Well, Dr. Hawker, I can't thank you enough for being on our show. I mean, I'm always so inspired by you. And one day when I try to get to retire from my job, I'm going to become an advocate. Because I just love the idea. You know, I just think it's wonderful, and I'm going to be really pursuing this more with our women in our network and putting it out in our newsletter, and everybody will read the description of this on this show, and we'll put the word out on Facebook, and we really appreciate all that you do on behalf of women and behalf of everybody to make a better life for people. And
thank you.
I'm hoping that you'll come back in the spring. Next time you're doing another program, we'll get people for this one, hopefully, and hopefully you'll come back again. Because there's always so many more issues to discuss. So on behalf of all three of us, we're wishing all our listeners a happy new year. You can go now and celebrate. And throughout the week, if you're listening to this show, don't hesitate to let me know if you have any questions or if you want me to hook you up to the program. Just send me a note. And, Deborah, I would love to wish you a happy new year.
Happy new year, Bonnie. And happy new year, Dr. Huffer. I really admire the work you're doing.
Yes, you're the best.
Well,
you really are.
Party.
Thank you so much.
I've loved it.
Yeah, that certainly has.
Stay
way to start to bring in my new year in a wonderful way. All right, so to all our listeners, we want to wish you a good night. Happy New Year, and we'll be talking to you soon. Good night, Dr. Huffer.
Good night,
Deborah.
Good night.
Bye-bye.